Welcome back, readers and romance seekers, to Hopelessly Romantic Behind the Page. I guess I have some explaining to do. I promise that I will. We had some major life updates and changes in the past 2 months, and hopefully that will explain my unexpected absence, but I hope you all have been doing well. The heat, is finally starting to subside here. School's back in session everywhere. The kids are getting on their buses and they're doing stuff. And it's still humid as all get out, but, you know, small wins. But really, I hope you've been having a good week. And before I really get into why I vanished, we can take one final look at Her Honorable Mercenary. And to be frank, I really don't have much else to say about it. I essentially got out pretty much everything that I wanted to say, and there really wasn't anything that I really wanted to elaborate on. I did go on an unexpected tirade about porn versus erotica, and terms are meaningless. Yeah, let's just go with that. Terms are meaningless, and I didn't expect to get on that tirade because I guess I needed something else that was interesting to actually talk about. But really, I just want to move on from that book as quickly as I can. I hated reading it. It did not end up on the shelf of shame. It wasn't that bad, but it was not an enjoyable read at all. It was just such a slog. I had to keep forcing myself to continue reading, pushing every single word into my eyeballs like I was Sisyphus pushing that boulder up the hill in the underworld. And half the time, I had to go back and read something again because what I did read just didn't stick around in my brain long enough to register it. Remember how I mentioned that Ian's death escaped me the first time that I read the book? I'm really genuinely not kidding about that. Marjorie and Everard were on their way to Everard's village at the end before it clicked to me that Ian was dead. I thought that they just left, that they were able to escape. And that's why it's a bad idea to have an off-screen death. Yes, yes, his death was off-screen. Everard's description of the event after the fact does not count. I will never know, for the life of me, why the author decided not to show us Everard's perspective during Ian's death. Because he was clearly there. He was able to tell us exactly what happened. So when you hear me screaming about show, don't tell, this is what I'm talking about. This right here, this little thing. The fact that we never got to see Ian's death was deeply disappointing. It's just like, yes, he was there. Why can't you have just shown us his perspective while he was there? No. I could go on forever about it. It makes me so mad. Yes, this novel was a side story to an established series, not actually meant to be written if the author is to be believed. So, of course, our heroes here are not the, quote, actual heroes. That particular honor goes to Betty and Lewis. And yes, they were, like, you know, the catalyst during the final battle with Ian, but Everett was still there, and I don't care about Betty and Lewis. I'm supposed to care about Marjorie and Everett. And the novel took away the one thing that would have helped solve the conflicts between our couple. We didn't get to see that resolved. It's just, oh, Ian's dead. Want to go? So at the heart of it, that's where I stand. Deeply disappointed and frustrated to boot. I'm hoping that my next novel that I pick for the podcast is at the very least captivating, lest I lose my mind. And really, like I said, there's not much else to talk about for Her Honorable Mercenary. I am ready to move on, so let's just go ahead and skip to what Heather's reading this week. And this is another interesting choice, not something in my usual purview. I have been reading Strong Towns by Charles Maturin. I think that's how I'm supposed to say it. Anyway, I'm not usually a big nonfiction reader. I have the occasional little differences here, and not differences. I do have the odd nonfiction book, like The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks is a really good example of that. And really, I never imagined in my life that I would catch myself reading something about, well, for lack of a better word, infrastructure. Essentially, Strong Towns is an examination of current American living establishments and what could be done to better improve the lives of everyone in our communities and in our country. Like I said, this would have never have caught my radar usually. Wouldn't have even pinged. But one day I was browsing YouTube, looking for something to have on in the background while I cooked. Yes, I am one of those people. I have to have background noise. And really, YouTube is one of the best ways for me to do it. YouTube, audiobooks, podcasts. I have to have some other input, stimulation input, for me to be able to focus on something that I'm actually doing. Yes, I understand how that's strange. Really, what I'll be watching is things like Legal Eagle, Baumgartner Restoration, Lindsay Ellis, Philosophy Tube, you know, that sort of long-form video essay style videos. The algorithm suggested a channel called Not Just Bikes. It's done by a Canadian living in the Netherlands. His channel focuses on civil infrastructure, namely how he has been able to completely abandon his car for the most part, and how his children are able to navigate their neighborhood safely without constant supervision. Like, to me, to this American who grew up in the nightmare that was both rural nowhere and tourist destination hellhole, it sounds incredible. Like, what do you mean I can walk to work and then take a bike to the grocery store? That sounds beautiful. And I don't have to watch my kids every aspect of the day because we have a strong connected community. And I can, like, oh yeah, that's Frank over there. He's got the kids. It's cool. Like, how nice is that? You might have seen that meme running around the internet where, you know, it'll feature kids in one panel and they're just staring at phones or a video game, and that caption that reads, "Why don't they go outside anymore?" And the next image is of, again, that hellish corridor of gas stations, unwalkable roadways, and concrete monotony. That is captioned with, "the outside that they built." So Not Just Bikes uses his channel to tell us that there's another way. This doesn't have to be how we live. He talks about it like a concept called strodes. It's not a street, it's not a road, it's just a strode, and it's terrible. Really, look up his videos. I highly recommend it. But also, one of the things that he does is he did a small series on Marone's book, Strong Towns. And that's how I learned about it. Strong Towns describes a bottom-up restructuring of American philosophy when it comes to building communities and strengthening our people, empowering them to succeed in all aspects of their lives. Initially, I was a little skeptical, mostly because at the beginning of the book, Marone describes himself as a fiscal conservative. I've already got my hackles up at such a declaration, especially because the word conservative just gives me hives now. But also, I'm very much not a fiscal conservative. I have a strong belief that governments have a responsibility to protect their citizens, including providing healthcare, education, and even shelter. I am practically a communist if you asked any random Republican on the street. But Marone describes his philosophy in such a way that not only did it make sense, but I could actually see it happening if we all got our heads out of our asses and worked together. One aspect of his philosophy centers around the idea of private enterprises taking on the burden of public infrastructure, such as roads, water management, waste removal, even emergency services, and also being responsible for ongoing maintenance, not just the major projects when something major breaks, but, you know, taking care of the little things when the little things happen. That way you don't have to do one big massive project and thus cost yourself a lot of money. Originally, I was hesitant on this, maybe I still am a little bit, because I know how greedy capitalists can be, and an unregulated system is a dangerous system. But then I remembered, this is exactly how Walt Disney World operates. If you visit Walt Disney World in Florida and stay on the property, your every need is cared for by the Disney Corporation. And I mean every need, not just housekeeping and entertainment and going out to restaurants, but trash removal, wastewater management, electricity, security, transportation, even those medical emergency services. When I worked as a cast member, they actually had an on-site medical facility where I could get, like, you know, my regular doctor visits, my primary care practitioner. Is the system at Disney perfect? Then no, of course not. But it serves the needs of not just the Disney Corporation, but for the cast members, the guests, and other members of the community outside Disney's walls. They're even talking about maybe building some affordable on-site housing for cast members, because housing in Orlando is expensive and Disney doesn't exactly pay well enough for us to be able to afford, you know, $3,000 apartments. I wish I was joking. But by taking on these burdens, Disney has released the taxpayers from the responsibility of caring for the intense needs of Disney's infrastructure. Of course, that idiot Governor DeSantis is doing his level best to dismantle Disney's ability to do this, because that makes sense. Anyway, but really, as I'm reading this, and I made that revelation that Strong Towns was proposing a model similar to Disney, literally the next line in the book was, this is how the Walt Disney Corporation works in its theme parks. So I guess you can only take the girl out of Disney. But as a new parent, the world that Strong Towns envisions gives me hope that it doesn't have to all be concrete prisons and capitalistic trash down strodes that don't even have sidewalks. Really, I implore all of you, go out, look up this book, look up Marone, check out the Strong Towns website. There's so much more than what I explained. I couldn't really tell about all of it, but they're doing a lot of good work to get this dream to become a reality. And I wonder if you noticed that little bit up there. A new parent. That was my major life update that prevented me from getting back on track in time. I did not have a baby, but rather my technical advisor and I have become foster parents. In the state in which I currently live, Indiana has about 13,000 children in foster care. With the latest news that Indiana has outlawed abortion pretty much outright, that number is going to grow. While we may only be one couple, we can still make a difference for some of these kids. My running joke is that I've been referring to my husband as my technical advisor. Mostly because it's true, I wouldn't have such a nice podcasting setup or a beautiful website without him, but also because I find it funny. It's probably only funny to me, though. Anyway, we began the process to become foster parents late last year, and it's a long process. They want to investigate every aspect of your life, because these kids need good homes, and they can't just approve anyone. They want your financials, driving records, insurance records, vaccination records. How was your home life growing up? What do you and your spouse fight about? Could you support a child before the state sends you the stipend for being a foster parent? What are your plans for education and discipline? Everything. It was more invasive than the immigration department when we were working on getting my husband his green card. And that is saying something. And this also does not include the hours of training that you have to complete, including trauma awareness and CPR certification. Even after you've gotten your foster care license, you have to pursue further training. It is a long, difficult, and emotionally taxing process. And it's worth it. These kids need us. No matter how horrible their situations were when these children were removed from their homes, that act of removal alone is traumatic. Because at the end of the day, the best place for a child is, it's not with me. It's with their family, but they can't be with their families right now. The purpose of foster care is to help both children and their parents and families to get to a place where they can reunite with one another in a better place than where they were before. This involves judges, caseworkers, doctors, and so many more people than you could possibly imagine. It's hard work, but important work. So when I dropped off the face of the earth, it was because I blew through my buffer faster than I expected when we accepted our first foster into our home. But school was still out, it was summer, and no amount of training could prepare us for the reality of having a child in our home. But school's back in, thank the stars, and now I've got a good handle on what I'm doing, I think. I promise I won't change anything about the podcast. It's not going to be suddenly turned into a parenting podcast. Though I might have some different perspectives now that I've entered the ranks of white suburban soccer mom. So that'll be it for me today. I will see you here again next week when we read A Deal with the Elf King by Elise Kova. Thank you for joining me, readers and romance seekers, and I hope to see you once again for Hopelessly Romantic. If you like the show, please visit us at hopelesslyromanticpodcast.com. If you have questions or want to recommend a read, please email us at contact@hopelesslyromanticpodcast.com. Also, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will go a long way to help the show, and I can keep bringing you lots of fun episodes. The show is written and produced by me, Heather Songster. Our technical advisor is Kwang Yin Cho. Hopelessly Romantic is an H with K production. And it doesn't matter what you read, only that it's what you love.